From Migration Media, this is Migratory Patterns. I'm your host, Mike Shaw. Born in America, Rhea Rudnicki grew up as a TCK, bouncing around the world as part of a multicultural family. In essence, she's been a migrant all of her life. So when she ended up in the U.S. for high school and college, the experience that most of us take for granted was a huge culture shock for her. How do you navigate your daily life when you're surrounded by your fellow countrymen, but they're all completely and utterly foreign to you? It brings a whole new level of dread to that first day in the cafeteria when you're looking for a place to sit down for lunch. And after school is over, what then? How do you define yourself once the familiar social structures of educational institutions are gone? It's a problem that her engineering mind is just now starting to figure out. One of the things that I love most about doing this show is how I get to catch glimpses of different perspectives of the migration experience. As someone who made the decision to move overseas in adulthood, I can't know what it was like to have grown up constantly moving from place to place, to never feel like my identity was tied to my upbringing in a specific place. And while I can feel my sense of self shifting with each year that goes by living overseas, kind of like sand around my feet as waves roll in, I'm still experiencing that as someone who has come from a place. How much different would I be as a person if my entire life had been lived this way? Would I have the same values? Would I make the same kind of friends? Would I even feel American? These kinds of things are, of course, unknowable, but thinking about them is important because the phenomenon of children being raised outside their parents' country of origin is a growing one, and it's growing by a lot, in fact. And the way that these kids think about things like national identity, patriotism, and our current systems of social structure will determine how those systems are able to handle the strain of so many people struggling to change them. Those are the really big questions. And the only way to answer such big questions is by having small conversations like this one. So let's get started. Please sit back, relax, and enjoy my conversation with Mio Rudnicki. Mio Rudnicki, welcome to Migratory Patterns.
Thank you.
Where is home?
Home, that's a kind of a long answer for that. Well, there are places I feel at home. Like, I like coming back to Beijing. My cats are here, and my husband's here. Obviously, now a lot of friends and community here, too. But I was just in San Diego where I went to university, and that definitely felt like home. You know, being back somewhere, I spent 4 years, which is the longest I've ever lived anywhere. So that's a hard question to answer.
So you went to university in San Diego.
I did.
Are you originally from San Diego?
No. So I'll just get that out of the way.
If I remember correctly, because we've talked about this once before, there's like kind of there's many stages. Instead of working backwards, let's work forward. So where did the story begin?
Boston.
Oh, great.
I did, yeah.
That's a fabulous city to be from.
Yeah. No bias. Yeah, I was born in Boston. My dad was getting his PhD at the time.
I knew there was a reason I liked you.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was only there for 3 years, so I don't really know too much. I'm born in Brigham Women's Hospital, my sister and I are both born there. And she's 2 years younger than me. Right before her first birthday, we moved to Beijing. And we were here for a year, moved to Japan, Kobe for a year, then Hong Kong 3.5 years, France for 3.5 years, Singapore for 2.5 years, Shanghai for a year, Texas for 3 years. Did my university in San Diego for 4 years, moved to San Francisco for a year and a half, and then now I've been here. In May, it'll be 2 years.
So you're an all-grown-up TCK.
All-grown-up, yeah. No, I guess so. I mean, yeah, that's kind of the group. I mean, I feel like I was always around international people in Singapore and Shanghai and Hong Kong. But in France, I went to a local French school. So the most international, actually, it was quite international being Europe. Most people were from England or just from France already. I think I had a few people from who I was friends with from Finland and maybe India. But that was mostly people in that area, not too many Americans.
So if someone asks, where are you from? What is your answer?
I say it's a long answer.
There you go.
Do you have time? How much time do you have? No, I usually – depends on the conversation. I just say, well, I'm living in Beijing now, but I'm Japanese-American, and I grew up moving around a bunch. So. Oh.
This is always interesting because, you know, my experience is I'm a homeboy. Mm-hmm. I'm a homebody. I grew – you know, born and raised in Boston. The only other place I've ever lived is Beijing, and I lived here for over 10 years. So yeah. I'm like, I can say I'm from Boston. I can say I grew up in Boston. I'm New Englander. I'm Irish Catholic or Irish American, whatever that is. And then I can say jokingly, like, wish a Beijinger, like, I'm a Beijinger because I've been here for, you know, 10 and a half years.
Yeah. And especially so developmental too.
But I don't have this experience of bouncing around and having all these different places. I might do that, but especially not growing up, I can't even imagine what that's like. Did you ever feel like you were missing out on anything?
I guess in some ways, yeah. You know, like I, you know, with Facebook and stuff, you keep up with people you've known throughout the years, and people I went to school in France with are still getting together now. And that's amazing to me because I just think, wow, that friendship now, that spanned, you know, 10 plus years, like that's really impressive. I feel like I've missed out a little bit on that kind of, you know, being rooted somewhere, having, like you said, a home and just kind of a consistent friend group that I've kept throughout the years.
So one of the people I've spoken to in the past, Tanya Crossman, she's studied TCKs who are all grown up, actually your age, about your age.
Okay.
And she says that 85 to 90% of them will say that they see their upbringing, the fact that they were TCKs, you know, multinational, you know, grew up moving around and had this experience that was outside their quote home culture, their passport culture, as being positive and making them, they have a very positive identity and attitude about that experience. Do you think you fall in that category?
I'd say so, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think a lesson I learned along the way, it did take some time, but was I used to be very, very shy in middle school, kind of, well, prior to that too, primary school, all that. And I think eventually
I don't think you can survive like that.
Exactly. It's eventually I just kind of had to realize I can't just keep waiting for someone to make the first move and make the first step towards being my friend. If I'm, you know, new to a place, I have to learn to be comfortable taking that first step and kind of putting myself out there, even if it's uncomfortable. And that definitely helped. Maybe it was just kind of subconsciously honed throughout the years, but when I moved here, that definitely made, I don't know, I definitely felt that more consciously being in Beijing, where I had to actively make the first step towards meeting people and building a community and things like that. So I think it was overall very positive, and it's so fun, you know, especially being an international city like Beijing, getting to know people. It's sad when people move away, whether it's me or the other people, but it just kind of makes the world so much smaller, where everywhere I go and I feel like I can meet up with someone, whether it's from someone I went to school with 15 years ago or someone I, you know, met in Beijing last year. And so I think the benefits definitely outweigh the negatives.
It's so interesting to hear you say that, because as someone who didn't live that experience, the kind of experience, there is a natural, and I make conscious efforts to again, it's like I recognize it now, but there is a natural kind of knee jerk, like, wait a minute, but you couldn't form connections. You were always leaving. Listen to yourself. You talk about people leaving your life as something that just happens. Like, that's tragic. Don't you know how to form relationships? You know,
like that,
because that's outside my experience, right? But at the same time, that's just what you learned growing up. It's just different. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to, it's a different way of learning about relationships and connections. And you see the value in having people who you know you are close with or can be close with or pick up again with all over the world. Mm-hmm. Whereas most people, their only experience is having those close relationships with people who are in their relatively confined geographic space,
mm-hmm.
which is just different.
Yeah, that's interesting. I never thought about it from the other side. Like, what's the normal? You know
what is normal, right? Well, that's the thing. So I remember, I think I've talked about this before here, but I remember I was at a party or some function for some of my wife's colleagues who are all mm-hmm. teachers, and we were talking about the study that this woman Tanya Crossman did, and they were, their responses were, oh my God, how can these kids feel good about like their life? Like, they grew up, they don't have this. And I kind of said, wait a minute, listen to us. We're talking about these things as if they are necessary. They are what we knew, mm-hmm. but these kids knew something different. And to a kid, whatever is happening is normal. Mm-hmm. There is no conception of what is quote normal, because it's just what they know.
Yeah, there's no other reference point, you know?
Yeah, so. Until the culture in some way starts to tell them this is normal and you're not it,
mm-hmm.
which is imposed upon them, right? So when you were, let's not say growing up, let's fast forward a little bit. Say you get to high school and you're in Texas, right?
Yeah.
So does the quote normal start smacking you in the face and you feel
absolutely.
Weird?
Oh my gosh. Texas was by far the biggest cultural shock I've ever experienced personally. The thing was, I had done my first year of high school in Shanghai. And so sophomore year is when I moved to Texas. And so.
What part of Texas?
Near Houston.
Near Houston. Was it relatively diverse?
No.
No. Were there any other vaguely non-Caucasian faces like yours around?
Yeah, and I became friends with them. It was weird. We kind of like gravitated towards each other. And they, you know, they were considered the international students, and they had lived in Houston in that same city since 7 years old, about 7 years old. And they were considered the international kids.
Wow.
And I was just laughing because I'm sitting there. I'm like, I'm 15 and I'm, you know, trying to meet people who are international or just have lived outside of Houston. And it was, I'll never forget, you know, at that point I was kind of in the phase of, okay, I need to make the first step, you know, kind of becoming more conscious. And it was so crazy that year, a friend of mine I went to middle school in Singapore with, she actually moved to the exact same city in near Houston, Texas. It was called Kingwood. And we went to the same high school. So that was a huge small world event. Like, what are the odds that someone I went to school with in Singapore just 2 years prior, we're going to be in the same high school in the suburb in Texas. And so that was really neat. I definitely was super happy about that. It's always so helpful when you know at least one person. Same thing, one of my best friends, again, from Singapore, but when I first met her in sixth grade, she became my roommate in San Diego freshman year dorms. Just totally game changer when it came to being able to feel more comfortable with putting yourself out there. But anyway, so that first, I think it was the first week of high school, in Texas that I was experiencing. And I, you know, I was trying to see, you know, that awkward cafeteria time, you know, you show up and you have your tray and you're like, where do I sit? Luckily I had her, so I wasn't alone, but I saw this other girl was alone. And so we said, oh, let's go, you know, make her feel more comfortable. So, we sat down next to her. And
I know what we'll do. We'll go be affirmative and make her feel less uncomfortable. We're really, that's what we're doing for ourselves.
We're doing for ourselves, yeah. We're just trying to pretend we're like philanthropic. No, yeah, I mean, you know, it doesn't have to be just one way. It can be mutually beneficial. So I, no harm in that. So I sat down and started asking her questions. Oh, like, are you new? And she's like, yeah, I'm new. I was like, oh my gosh, another new person. You know, where are you from? And she's like, oh, I came from Riverwood Middle School. So she just came from a different middle school in the same city. Well, of course, we knew if you're in ninth grade, you know, and you're in high school. So different kind of new than I was expecting. But just kind of asked her questions like, oh, how's it been living here? You know, how are you enjoying your first week? And eventually, after a few questions like that and getting nothing back, she said, she answered one of my questions. I can't remember what it was. I'm like, you know, do you have any siblings? And she's like, yeah, can I eat?
Oh, no.
And so they're like, oh, well, this is kind of awkward. So we're like, sure. Okay. And then just kind of quietly ate after that. But it was just such a weird, weird change because in international schools, it's almost like this frenzy the first few days of school and honestly throughout because people are constantly coming in and out. And so it's almost like this frenzy of people always trying to meet people and always trying to make friends because you don't know how long you're going to be there. You don't know how long those people are going to be here. So you almost have this kind of sense of urgency to make the most of your time while you're there. There's no, you know, kind of period of waiting or transition because you're like, let's just go.
God, I'm so glad I had you in to talk to you because you're now giving me the flip side of what I talked to Tanya Crossman about. And I just keep referencing her.
Well, was Tanya also a TCK or what was her background?
Kind of. She did spend some years in high school in the US as an Australian kid. So she do that, but she's been living overseas for a while. Everyone should go back and listen to episode 19, my interview with Tanya Crossman to kind of get my referential stuff. But I'll sum up here and say, when we talked, she kind of blew my mind with this – when she talked about – she blew my mind when she took my feelings about being in a migrant or an expat and having people leave in cycles. And, you know, you make these intense friendships. I call them my first year friends. My cohort of friends from my first year in Beijing, they were also people in their first year, almost all of them. And we became really close, really tight, very tight kind of group. And I'm still friends with them, you know.
That's amazing. That is so amazing.
But then, you know, most of them leave. And then you kind of do it again. And then I have kind of another group of friends that I made in my second and third year. And they were around for a little bit longer, but almost all of them are gone. Mm-hmm. And you go through these waves and then she said to me, she flipped it on me and she said, well, now imagine that's your year as a, every year as a kid growing up, that's your life every single year. And I was like, oh my God, like it blew my mind. But you're giving me the flip side positive of it because in America, you've got this awkward kind of week or two where everyone's trying to figure out in the, where do I sit? Awkward conversation. This person doesn't want to talk to you. But if you're in a national school, it's not like that at all because everyone is like, who are you? Let me meet you and see if I like you. Like it's very affirmative and very – you don't have that thing that we all dread from growing up. You have a positive spin on it.
Yeah. I mean, I guess – I don't know if it was a like a defense mechanism almost. Like how do you survive, you know, if you don't have a positive mindset towards it? But no, it was definitely hard, especially – but I remember the hardest times were when I was at the local – school. So in France, it was so hard because I moved there and I didn't speak the language at all. I didn't even know how to say hello when we moved there. And also, I'm learning science and math and history and geography and French. And I just kind of have to, you know, sink or swim. And luckily, you know, being nine, I think I was around 8 or 9 years old. I was at the age where I could absorb the language pretty quickly. And being immersed, like we're talking about with Chinese, there's only so much you can learn if your general surroundings are all in English. But since I was so immersed, like French neighbors, French, you know, bakery nearby, French teachers, French classes, everything, it was inevitable. Yeah, I mean, in that and then obviously the Texas experience, it was hard at first. But, you know, you started meeting people in class every day. I actually had a little bit of this kind of feeling in university, mainly because I went to California school. And so that was almost kind of local there, too. You know, everyone's from different parts of California.
I was actually going to ask, I wanted to do a little bit more in Texas, but I wanted to ask how was the experience different or the same when you got to university?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I was a little disappointed at the beginning.
Did you gravitate towards the international students for the kids from overseas or did you? So I guess what I'm trying to kind of figure out here, again, this is not my experience, is you go through this process of cultural acclimation, you know, in high school and you have like three good years of it in Texas, right? So you go through this process and you figure out, I'm friends with people who are from here, and I'm assuming you're always an outsider in some way. But does that translate to college? Is it like, did you feel like you were playing kind of a role or living in a space, and then when you got to college, you could do something else or kind of go back to the way it was? Like, how did that work?
I guess, well, that's what was surprising. I thought university would be more of a mix of international people. And there are a lot of international students. It's just the problem is they tend to be – They're like all Chinese, so they tend to stick with the Chinese because that's what they're comfortable with. And I get that, you know, culturally, you know, like culinarily, like there's all these, you know, all these things that make you feel at home. And what made them feel at home was kind of sticking together. But I think I kind of just created friend groups in different areas. So I was in a sorority. And I was but not my first year. It took my husband, who I met summer after my first year, to kind of convince me to rush. I just had the, you know, the stereotype about it, but ended up not being that way at all. It was just a really great community there, very philanthropy driven, which I did not expect. It's not part of the stereotype typically. But then I was in engineering. I had my friends I lived with my first year in the dorms, and I was also in a lot of culture almost too. I was part of Singapore Student Association. I was an exec there. And then on the board of the American Institute of Chemical Engineers and also on the board of the Society of Women Engineers. And then also just a member though of Kappa. And then I was also really involved in Greek life in general. So it was kind of like.
Did you ever go to class?
I did. That's also kind of threw me off was, in Texas, where I did end up making friends was being in class, where you inevitably end up sitting in the same chair every day, and you meet the people in your little circle surrounding your desk, and then kind of grows from there. Maybe you meet some neighbors that are nearby because you can just walk there and it's convenient. But I was also in a bunch of clubs there and leadership positions there, which I think that's what the key was to be not just in a member of clubs, but to take on leadership positions, because that's when you actually get to work with the rest of the board. You have the weekly meetings. You have much more of a connection there, rather than just attending things and hopefully meeting people, maybe not. And so I think, you know, being involved in those different things, I didn't have a group, so to speak, but I had many groups, and that kind of fulfilled my international kind of feel for it. Because it was like international in the sense of interest. Like kind
it's like multicultural. It was almost like multicultural without being international.
Yeah, exactly. There are different, I would say, yeah, cultures within those orgs and norms and expectations.
So it sounds like that's what you really gravitate towards.
Just the mix.
It's what you know.
Yeah, I guess so. But, you know, it was kind of hard because I never really felt like I had that one core group. And so maybe it's, I'm curious to hear for your side too, having that core group. I mean, that must have felt really nice too. That's, I imagine it must have been really nice to have like a close-knit group for years and years.
It's funny how you said that core group, because I immediately started to think about the core group of friends that I had in college and just after college. And that core group was pretty solid. You know, I'm very lucky that one of that core group, my friend Josh, who has been on this show, he is now living in Hong Kong with his wife, who I also knew from way back in college. And so I'm very lucky in that sense that in the same, you know, I'm going through the same experience. I'm on the same kind of life journey as one of my best friends from my core group, but we also don't see each other that much. You know, it's actually easy to say we both live in China, but he lives in the equivalent of, I live in the equivalent of DC. He lives in Miami. It's like, how often would you see your best friend if he lived in Miami and you lived in DC, right?
Yeah.
So that's kind of where we're at. And, but that idea of a core group, you're right. It's, you know, you have that and it's something that you see as, I mean, more than you see. I mean, I've actually spoken to people even in the context of this podcast as kind of a assumed thing. But if you're come from, if you come from a background that's international background where the people are leaving all the time and you learn how to make and maintain and relationships and have different expectations for them, you maybe wouldn't have that. And you would kind of wonder, what's that like? And I have to say, it makes it, it made it harder to move. It makes going back, quote, home more fraught, not in bad ways, but it's just there's – I have to carve out time to meet my friends. You know, I can't just go back for a wedding. I got to find the day where I can possibly meet with other people. And if I don't and I only have one afternoon, like I got to figure out like who do you ask? You know, it's like
– it's sort of prioritizing.
Exactly. And then you feel like crap because you do that. And, and you know, it's – It's a different experience to have that, quote, core group, and then you leave that group. Whereas someone like you, you've got friends all over the place, and you can kind of pick up and move wherever you want to go because you just know how to do that. It's natural for you.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I do that, but it definitely, you know, it actually was more of a recent kind of good conversation I had with my husband about it because he was born and raised in San Francisco, had kind of the opposite life of just being in one place.
I was going to ask if he was a TCK as well.
No, not even close. But he had an interesting mindset about moving that I think was very – I think it would have been, made my moves easier had I had that mindset growing up, which was – and something that his best friend included in his speech at our wedding, and he was his best man there, was basically if – at every life stage, if you can come out with, you know, even three good friends or even just one really, really good friend that you don't necessarily talk to every day in terms of maintaining a friendship, but maybe you have check-ins once a month or however frequently it feels comfortable, then that's a win. You know, there are only so many people that you can, I mean, especially when there's distance involved, if you feel like you can get over that hurdle and still stay close like that, it's almost like a test for the relationship. And if you can get through that, then you kind of feel like, what's the difference? If you're, you know, 100 miles apart, like a few thousand, then it's kind of, it doesn't make it as much of a difference at that point. Cause like you said, DC to Miami, you're not going to hang out every day, you know, like anywhere further than that also doesn't really make that much of a difference. Just an extra half an hour on the plane or something. You kind of just have to realize it's okay to not, and that's something I struggled with too. I always thought, oh, good friends are people I stay in touch with all the time. I had to come to the realization that if I can pick up where I leave off with them and it feels like no time has passed and there's no kind of tension on either side of like unmet expectations of as much communication as they were wanting or whatever, then it can just feel really great to just pick up and cherish the fact that, oh, this feels so comfortable still. And I didn't need to spend all that time trying to maintain it. It was just going to maintain itself just by having that strong connection in the first place.
I think people who didn't grow up TCKs can relate to this. And this is kind of the way we can as someone who didn't grow up as a TCK, this is a way I can kind of relate to your experience, because mm-hmm. we are, you know, everyone has that quote best friend or core group of friends where, you know, no matter how much time has gone by, you can just meet up for a weekend and it's like no time has passed,
yeah, yeah.
or get on the phone with them and you don't have to talk about other stuff. You just pick up right where you left off. Mm-hmm. And everyone has that, I think. And that is a good way to think about it, where you have these connections and maybe they're not quite as deep, or there's different levels of them or whatever they are, but it's that same kind of thing where, you know, you can just pick up with them or you could drop in with them. I've, you know, since I moved overseas, I have, like I said, that core group from the first year.
Yeah.
There's a few of them where I know I could just show up, or they could just show up, and it would be like, boom.
Yeah.
You know, right back to.
See, that's so special.
It is.
It's so nice.
And I guess, again, that's the – there's a flip side to everything, but this is the flip side of not having the core group like you do, or like you did growing up. You have the other side of that, which is you have a disparate group, but it's everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And you maybe have more of those – connections that you can drop back into than maybe someone who was in one place their whole time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 Again, you know, pros and cons to any situation, but I think that was definitely a big pro is, for example, this past December, we traveled to a bunch of different places. We were in Munich, we were in Salzburg, we were in Prague, and we went to Tampa.
And you knew somewhere everywhere.
Literally every single city we were in, we met up with someone, or maybe more than one person. And that just kind of blew my mind. It just kind of almost just kind of, it was like this model of what the benefits can be from this. You know, it's so easy to look at the negative of it and feel sad when you don't have, you know, your best friend to just be like, hey, let me come over now, or like, can you come over now, kind of ease. But then when you feel like you can have that, but anywhere in the world, everywhere you go, I mean, that's just, I don't know. I really enjoyed that. And I think it's a huge benefit I feel lucky to have.
Yeah. I really relate to that because my wife and we've lived overseas, or we've been migrants for about the same amount of time. My overseas experience, this is not a qualitative judgment, but my overseas experience has been a bit more outside of, she's been in Beijing for about 4.5 years. I've been here for 10.5 years. Those other 6 years, she was living an experience that wasn't as, there weren't as many people around. It was very, it was much more of a kind of a settled or core thing. That's a very vague way of saying I just met more people. So anyway, but we've talked about taking vacations, and, you know, she's a teacher, so we might have like a month, we can do some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And every time we think of a place we're going to go, no matter what continent it is, no matter what country it is, like, oh, I know like 7 people there.
Yeah.
And that is just overwhelming for her, because she's, you know, she doesn't have that. You know, she has some of it, but, you know, she's not at the point where it's kind of a reality yet. You know, at some point we'll leave Beijing. We don't know when that'll be, but when we do, we're going to go to a new place, and then she's kind of going to have this thing where, oh, I know people who are all over here. She's starting to have it now with her cohort of teachers who are in her graduate program.
Mm-hmm.
So she's like, oh, I know someone in this country, and I know someone over there. Oh, I can contact that person about mm-hmm. learning about that place. So she's starting to kind of see it, but I'm like kind of like you now. I'm at the point where it's like, oh, we're going to Europe. Oh, we got to hit these 7 countries because I know people.
Yeah.
That's how I map my vacations.
Exactly.
Where can I go to that, see people I know? Now,
yeah.
I want to ask a little bit about you and your husband, because he's not a TCK. Did you feel like there was a culture clash with your relationship? I mean, you meet someone in college, you fall in love, or whenever you meet them, you fall in love. I don't think that matters no matter what your cultural differences are.
Mm-hmm.
But then you get into the nitty gritty of like, okay, now we're committing to each other, we're going to be married.
Yeah.
Did you find some cultural differences that I don't want to say cause problems, but were like, hey, that's different?
Because
he's American.
Yeah, yeah. Again, born and raised in SF. Granted, being born and raised in San Francisco, he's, you know, lived in America his whole life. Not the same as being like born and raised, I don't know, in the Midwest or somewhere where maybe there isn't as much of an international community. Obviously, depending on what city. San Francisco's so, so multicultural and international. He was kind of always around different cultures anyway. And his parents were great. Every year they went on a family trip to another country. I think starting, maybe they were, Alex was maybe like 11 or so, maybe 13, something like that. In a stage where he would be able to really enjoy and be aware of how cool the experience was, you know, versus taking like a 5-year-old on a trip. Like, it's great. Don't know how much they're going to remember in 10 years. So I think when they started being more aware is when they started taking them on annual trips, just one place a year, somewhere international. And he loved that. He loved, you know, experiencing a whole new culture, being immersed. They do trips really, really well. Where they will stay somewhere for like, you know, 3 weeks in kind of one seat and really get to know it, or, you know, as a country if it's small enough. And so he loved that. And having had that exposure, I think, really helped him with our move to Beijing.
I was going to ask, so how does Beijing come into the equation? How do you end up here?
Well, so when we lived in Shanghai, we left.
This is when you were a kid?
Yeah. Okay. So, that, you know, 14 or whatever. And my father is working, he's a, you know, a business school professor. So he was in Shanghai for maybe a year after that, and then moved to Beijing, which is where he is now at Tsinghua. So he's teaching there, and he's been there for, you know, this many years. And, my husband was at a point in his career where he had kind of plateaued at the job he was at. He could get promoted to the next position, but he didn't really want that job. It wasn't a position he felt he would learn that much from or that much more from compared to the position he was in already. And so, you know, he's very reflective and very thoughtful. And so he kind of was realizing, you know what, I'm at the stage now where I want to get a new experience. I want to learn a new industry. You know, a good transition to that would be an MBA. So we started looking at MBAs, you know, obviously the fact that we're in America, we started looking at the ones in the US. I think being influenced by my lifestyle and my father living in Beijing, you know, just chatting with him because he's one of his mentors, he said, why don't you consider, you know, coming to China? You know, we have a great program here. There's an international section. So it's
not in Chinese. Your father-in-law's got some guanxi.
Well, I mean, actually, he did the opposite.
Really?
Instead of writing a letter of recommendation, he wrote a letter of, if you accept him, I'm going to be harder on him than the other students. So it was almost like a, you know, he's not benefiting from this in a way that, you know, the people would expect. And it just kind of, having visited here.
Is the program in Chinese?
No, it's in English. Okay. That's the thing.
Oh, the international section there.
Yeah. Okay. So it's MIT Tsinghua Global MBA program.
Right.
It's majority Chinese, but there are, you know, some international people. I think only a couple Americans, though. So it's very different from what he would have experienced at an MBA program in the U.S. And that's kind of what he wanted. You know, he was like, you know, I could go to a school in the U.S., but, you know, we had just gotten married. We moved to China 2 days after. Looking back, we can't imagine.
That's quite the honeymoon.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, we traveled a lot in between that stage, but and also being here too. We moved here a few months before his program started, so we were able to take advantage of being in Asia and kind of exploring around here. It was one of those things where it's like, we want to write our own story. Why don't we make it as interesting to us as we want it to be? And so obviously being in NBA or being in a different city in the US would have been really cool too. But moving to Beijing, being in a totally different environment for him was just kind of an experience we wanted to have. And I quickly learned that even though I grew up moving around in schools, it's so different to move to a new place without the comfort of being in a school system.
You know, I was actually just thinking that because one of the things that I hope this will be the last time I have to reference the previous thing, but one of the things that Tanya said was that when she moved, or when TCKs move, they are moving from a place that is structured to a place that is structured. And they learn how, like they understand, I'm going to school. I know how to study and do well in school.
Yeah.
You know, whether you're a good student and, you know, that's kind of irregardless. But, and she said that a lot of the problems that TCKs will be after they graduate from college because you're no longer in that structure.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh my God, I'm on my own now. So you got this big smile on your face. This is kind of what I'm kind of getting at. So you went from, TCK situation to, you know, well, you're still a TCK, but you jumped into Texas for a while, had the culture shock. Then you did university and you found your way by glomming onto all these different groups and doing all that great stuff and your classes. Well, now you're not in any of that. Now you're kind of out on your own. What are your problems now? What's making you go crazy?
Well, what was making me go crazy was that lack of structure. You know, it was, you kind of get to know the system after a while growing up in schools and moving around different schools. It's like, okay, I have my classes, I'll get to know my teachers. And you know, they were usually my first friends because I, you know, they're just more interesting. I don't know, and more accepting. Students, especially like middle school, high school, you know, they're not in the mindset of like, oh, let me get to know some, you know, generally people tend to be more concerned with themselves, and it makes sense. You know, it's just how we are. But I found that teachers especially were always nicer to me than the students were at first. Well, that was my experience anyway in Texas. And so that I got to know my teachers there, and that led to me hearing about, because, you know, the teachers would be the kind of the, what would you even call it? Not the sponsor, but the person who's in
mentor?
Charge. Yeah, of different clubs and groups.
Oh, yes. Facilitator or faculty facilitator or faculty advisor or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't know how professional I was in high school, but it was kind of like that where there was someone who was running it or at least in charge of kind of manning the general process. But they wanted students to be there and kind of being leaders in it, you know, sharing the word, you know, experience, like kind of getting the recruitment side of it they wanted the students to do. And so I got to know the teachers that way, which got me involved in the different groups. I think that was my thing. I was always like, okay, I'm going to go to a new place, immediately get involved in the groups there, because that was the quickest way to meet people with similar interests, and you bond, and then you grow deeper friendships from that. It's kind of like a formula. Moving to San Francisco actually was a little bit of a shock in that, like the thing that Tanya was talking about, just like all of a sudden, you know, it was just the post-college stage where
Now I have to figure out who I am and what I want to do.
I don't have this like nice cocoon of a school classes that you choose, and you have your semester figured out and that's set. All of a sudden you show up and you're like, wait, I have to figure out what job I'm going to get, how to network, how to meet people outside of these nice packages of groups and clubs and organizations that are already preset. And so San Francisco ended up being, I ended up connecting with people I'd been in school with in San Diego who actually happened to move up to San Francisco the same year I did. So it ended up being a very lucky situation where I didn't have to do as much work there because I had that same group. And having done long distance with my husband for 2 years, since he had graduated 2 years before me, I got to meet people whenever I would visit San Francisco that were there, had that kind of group to meet with. But it was still a bit harder because I didn't want to depend on my husband. Having done long distance for 2 years, I became much more independent throughout that. I got used to having my own friends, my own groups, my own plans, my own everything separate of him. And so moving up there, I didn't want to be like, let me just latch on to Alex's friends and all that. I want to be like, no, I want to make my own. And I did, and that was good. But then, you know, a year and a half later, we moved here. And I found myself in a similar situation. All of a sudden, we're here. It was great to explore Asia while we were here the first few months. But then I knew, you know, soon Alex was going to start his MBA. I didn't have a plan. Like, I didn't move here with a plan. I was here as Alex's wife. I don't want that title.
You're a trailing spouse.
Yeah. I hate that title.
I'm about to be that. I'm right there with you, sister.
Yeah, I guess. But I wonder if it's easier being a guy as a trailing spouse, because it's almost like,
well,
you choose that. But like for me, it's almost a stereotype being a woman. It's, you end up being categorized as like,
well,
oh, the woman who followed the husband.
Sure. And let's not complain. Let's not compare, you know, degrees of privilege and autonomy. But I will say,
whole other conversation.
You know, but what you're saying is totally valid. I mean, you know, to say you're the trailing spouse, as soon as I said it, I was like, oh, wait a minute, I've just thrown some gender stereotype at her, this really smart woman with the engineering degree, and now she's the trailing spouse. That's so demeaning. But like when you said it back to me, I was like, oh, yeah, of course. Like, I'm the guy. I'm supposed to be, quote, the provider, and I'm following the wife along.
The thing is, it's not just a stereotype, though. And that's where I get it because, well, to get
I'm cool with it, by the way. I've told my wife I'm totally cool. Like, you steer the ship for a while and I'm going to do some other things.
No, that's the thing. It doesn't have to be a negative thing. Yeah. It's just the way other people perceive it can be negative, and that's frustrating because I think a lot of times it is a person's choice. So, for example, it was my choice to move up to San Francisco. You know, Alex had 2 years of work experience and was building his career in the city. Why would I move us somewhere for my entry-level job, you know? And in a place like SF where there are lots of opportunities, it didn't really feel like a huge compromise. Beijing is also kind of like that, where being here.
So many opportunities.
So many opportunities. Yeah. I mean, a little bit difficult when you're on a tourist visa and you're not specifically recruited to a company, having to figure all that out. But what was invaluable was having my father here. He was the one who got us set up with our SIM card, you know, just like rent, like finding places to be and to where to go and the general places to.
You had someone who could at least give you a roadmap. Here's what you need to do and let me help you out just in the first few steps. That's invaluable.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. No, I don't – and I should say I don't feel like I am, quote, you know, telling my wife you could steer the ship. That's not what I mean. What I mean is that she – and I say this very freely to people. She came to Beijing for us. She took the leap. Mm-hmm. The next step is all about her. Like whatever you want to do, that's where we're going to go and I'll figure it out for myself. Don't worry. We're going to support your career for now. You came over here. You gave me a year or two here and I was able to figure myself out professionally. Now we're going to go and do your side. So it's a very much a team thing.
And I love that.
And after this next one, we'll talk about it.
Yeah.
You know, that the next one after that will be wherever that is. Even if it's not, even if we stay in Beijing, this is still on her. And then if there's another move, another contract after that, then we'll have a discussion. It'll be about what works for both of us. But right now, it's all her.
No, I love that. I think that's key. You know, it has to be a team thing. And that's whether it's so personal too, the decision and how the decision is made, I feel like is so personal and just depends on the person and each couple or whatever. And sometimes it will be back and forth. You know, like it seems like what you guys are doing where it's like, oh, it was my turn first and now it's your turn. And we kind of go back and forth like the ball in her court kind of thing, you know. But then there are other people where it's like, hey, you know what? You have a clear direction that you want to go in. I don't. So you can do that. I don't feel like I'm
giving anything
up. If I
have to figure out my stuff, I can figure out my stuff there just as well as I can here.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's kind of how I felt about it too, was like there's no particular direction that I felt like I needed to go in that I was giving up for this. And so on the outside, some people are quick to be like, oh, you know, look at how much you have sacrificed above. And I say, I don't see it that way. Like I wasn't sacrificing anything. If anything, I saw it as like a really exciting opportunity. At least one of us had a great opportunity and the other one will find it. And that's how I felt being here was. So this, I kind of an answer to a question I had a while back was, how did he handle the move? It was actually completely opposite to what you would think. I had the hardest time. It was horrible because, you know, it was like that next level experience that Tanya was referencing of like this kind of confusion of like, you know, lost feeling of, oh gosh, I'm not in a school anymore. I'm not in a structured environment. What do I do? And I didn't have, you know, people from university moving here. So it was like, I really am much more alone here. It was kind of the feeling. And obviously it's great to be with my dad and his friends, but there's a point again where I needed this.
Can't be hanging out with your dad's friends.
I like them a lot.
I'm sure, but there's
something
just
about Beijing. They tend to be much more, you know, open and young mindset and not stuck in their ways, kind of traditional. So that was really fun. And I still enjoy that, you know, just hung out with a bunch of his friends for his birthday on Saturday. It was just me and I loved it. But I think it was the expectation thing that was really crushing for me. I had that expectation having been okay in every move up till now, you know, either figured out quickly or whatever. Alex never having had that, his expectation was like down to the ground. It was like, oh, this is going to be so hard. I'm going to have to, you know, just figure everything out by myself. It's going to be so difficult. And for me, I was like, it's easy. You know, I've done this so many times. It's going to be a piece of cake. I'll take care of Alex. You know, it's kind of this, we kind of talked about it before. We get here and I was just in shock.
But who's going to take care of me?
I was like, wow, I did not expect to feel this kind of discomfort. As dumb as it sounds, I didn't expect to have to know so much Chinese being in Beijing. My experience in Shanghai was so bubble.
That's different.
And not only is Shanghai already is more international, even 10 years ago when I was there, it was. So I thought being in Beijing 10 years after that experience in Shanghai, it would be where Shanghai was then, but it's not. I mean, both know Shanghai is totally a different city, but the level of English is so absent in Beijing compared to Shanghai. And that on top of the fact that I was in an international British school in English all day, my friends were all, you know, they were international, but everyone, the classes were in English. So even the Chinese students spoke great English, had no necessity to learn Chinese to a fluent level. And so I got here, it was just kind of like, oh gosh, I really have to figure this out. And I don't know whether this was innate or built on one or the other, but being in engineering kind of cultivated this problem-solving mindset in me. And so I think that plus the whole experience of growing up and having to figure it out always kind of kicked into gear when I was here after feeling uncomfortable. I said, okay, what can I do about it? Versus like, what's going to be done for me about it? And so I just kind of was like, okay, well, what's lacking here? What am I missing? Well, I had a great group of girlfriends in San Francisco that now I don't have here. I want that. What am I going to do to get that? And so I just built my own community of female expats. It started off as like, I want my own girlfriends. And it's become this huge thing of transitioning people to Beijing and being the thing that I didn't have. Well, I had on a certain level with my dad, but it wasn't the same as being like in suddenly getting into this group of girls that were all really helpful, all wanting to kind of help with the transition, help with the questions everyone has, you know, like, hey guys, I'm trying to get a SIM card or I'm about to move to China. What do I need? And it was like, here's these bullet points of things you need. Don't rely on being able to buy shoes here because you're not going to find your size. Get them in
get used to the idea of buying men's shoes.
Yeah.
Bring all your underwear here. Like exactly. Have a luggage just for underwear.
Yeah. And food items that you can't find here too. I mean, they're little things that make a place feel comfortable. And once, you know, I recognized that there's a tangible list of things that would really help with it. And I got to kind of break it down. And everyone's gone through the same thing who's been here. Everyone's gone through that stage of shock. It was almost like this pay it forward feeling where everyone just wanted to help each other out. And so creating that community has definitely helped with the transition. And now I feel a lot more at home here. It feels like coming back to Beijing was, again, coming back. It was like I'm home feeling. So I don't know. It's a lot better now.
That's awesome. Well, it sounds like you're figuring out a new formula. And
I gotta kind of tweak that.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you coming in. I've loved talking to you about this because you've got this perspective that I'm not familiar with at all. It's a whole new way to think of migration because mostly we think of migration as people going from one place, from their place of origin to another. But your migration story is more, or it is what's becoming more common, which is people who just grow up migratory. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciated hearing it. Thank you so much for sharing.
Thanks for having me. It's fun.
Well, there you have it, folks. Thanks again to Mio for coming in. I really appreciate her sharing her story with us. These are great conversations, and as you could tell from how self-referential everything was in the beginning, the issues that she raised come up for a lot of people, and I'm excited to keep talking about them. Please do take a moment, go back to episode 19 to hear my conversation with Tanya Crossman, where we talk about a lot of these things. Of course, you can reach out to me with any questions. I'm at mike.shaw@migrationmedia.net. You can also find me at Twitter. I'm at ZAX2000. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.